This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Speaking of marijuana and the munchies, Friday we're going to be in one of our favorite places, Brian.
Kingside Diner, 8025 Bonham Avenue in Clayton. This is their new location, second location in the Clayton on the Park building, second floor right across from that Clayton Aquatic Center.
I wonder if our favorite chef is going to make that move, or he's going to stay on the one in the West End.
I don't know.
But he'll be in charge of everything.
Yes.
Man, that is good
stuff. The food there is fantastic.
Yep. I'm excited about it. Scooter in U City with a very thoughtful text. Frank, this is why we have an opiate problem. They feel amazing, and you can function, and they're all so damn addicting. I battled it for years, took a lot of hard work and love from my family. Best advice is to not go down that damn road. Scooter in U City, very nice text. Frank, my experience with Oxy was when I got four wisdom teeth taken out, the lady comes in and puts the gas on my nose and takes off the syringe cap with her teeth and says, let's rock and roll. Ugh, what? Woke up to the noise of teeth, tools rattling, and man, was that experience. Send me home with Oxy. And didn't care to be in bed like a vegetable for more than one day. That stuff is no joke. Cheers, fellas, from NC. All right, we're getting some great suggestions on greatest all-time athlete. And one guy that we've had on the radio recently, Missouri Sports Hall of Famer Bernard Gilkey. Averaged 22 a game, I believe, at U City. Of course, had a nice, really nice big league career with the Cardinals and the Mets. That's a great suggestion. Damian Nash, the late, great Damian Nash, one of the great football players of all time. I think he may have played basketball. I don't remember. I just remember him as an unbelievable football player.
Taylor Twellman from 314.
That is unbelievable, Brian. Because while he was the best soccer player in the region, he also kicked field goals for the football team. He was a point guard on the basketball team for a while, and he was a very good baseball player.
It's shocking that his soccer coach let that happen.
Let him play football?
Yes, or even
maybe they had an
basketball
agreement.
And just because if you're that good at that one sport, usually the coach says, hey, just focus on this.
Yeah, that's good.
And I hate to single out soccer because football coaches and baseball coaches do the same thing. Whereas if you're considered a prime prospect to not only be the best player on your team, but also maybe play collegially, they'll tell you to slow things down and don't risk injury in the other sport, which is unfortunate.
All right. Here's a good one. I saw him up close and personal. In fact, I'll see him probably Friday night. Bobby Keppel. How about this? State champion in basketball, where he stared down the Vashon Wolverines and scored 19 points, I think, in the first half, and DeSmet beat Vashon in the state finals. And then in baseball, all he did was become a first-round draft pick, and he led DeSmet to, I think, maybe a state title in, yeah, baseball, too. And he got to the big leagues, pitched in that historic game for the Minnesota Twins.
Blake Aaron texting in, curious how long until you throw your name in the mix.
And it won't make mix, no.
Was Macklin a two-sport guy? Someone texted in Jeremy Macklin. I know, obviously, football. Did he play a second sport in high school?
Oh, he played basketball. He was a guard, yeah. Not a superstar, though. Kristen Folkel on the women's side after JJK. How about this, guys? Four state championships in basketball.
That's good.
Four state championships in volleyball.
That's good.
She goes to Final Fours in basketball and volleyball.
Not bad.
At Stanford.
Okay.
I don't know if you can beat that. Well, Jackie
can. Pretty good career.
Yeah. Costco is the best place on the face of the earth, Ray King. Isaac Byrd, this is a good one. Parkway Central. A really good basketball player and, of course, played in the NFL. I think he played with the Titans. He did play with the Titans when the Rams played them in the Super Bowl. Here's a good one, too. Cardinal Ritter basketball coach Ryan Johnson. He was a two-sport athlete, CBC wide receiver, point guard, won a state title with Larry Hughes, ended up playing some football at Memphis. Now he's a terrific coach. And they say he ran track as well. So we're getting some great ones in terms of all-time great athletes. We'll get to this list. Well, here's another one. Alvin Morrow from Kirkwood. I remember him. Drafted by the Brewers, he was a terrific player. I think he was going to go to Miami, but then he drafted by the Milwaukee Brewers, and he was a really good-looking football player. Another great suggestion, Rusty Lish, played quarterback at Notre Dame, actually beat out Joe Montana, incredible high school basketball player at Belleville West. All right. Now, my perception of podcasts normally is two guys sitting in a room and talking for 45 minutes. Not much of a production element. Not a whole lot of content. Just two guys shooting the breeze. If you get a chance, do everything you can to pick up this podcast, Fall of a Titan, the Steve McNair story. Tim Rohan joins us, and it is a documentary. I mean, we are hearing from everybody possibly involved in the death of Steve McNair. Tim, great to be with you. Thanks so much. Congratulations on an incredible podcast. Are you three through as we speak?
No. We're all the way done. We're all the way done. The podcast it came out in the fall. It ran during football season, and the last episode came out in December.
Okay, I'm actually three through then. I can't wait to get to the next one. So let's tell the story. First of all, let's begin with, why do you decide, hey, this would be interesting to look into the death of Steve McNair because it seems so cut and dried, murder, suicide with a girlfriend?
Yeah, no, so it all started, I guess, in the summer of 2017. So, you know, it's almost, you know, a year and a half ago. You know, my editor and I were just talking about ideas, and, you know, Steve McNair's name came up, and, you know, he was such a, you know, he was one of the best quarterbacks of his era. He was an NFL MVP, shared the MVP award with Peyton Manning. He nearly led the Titans to a Super Bowl. You know, the Super Bowl is back in Atlanta this year, and that's where, you know, him and the Titans came up 1 yard short of, you know, potentially tying the game. And then he was murdered in this, you know, gruesome way, this horrific way. I mean, you know, and it felt, you know, we felt as though, you know, we should maybe go back and do a story and, you know, look back at what had happened. And it's, you know, I think we thought it was going to be a pretty straightforward story, you know, like you said, for a while people, you know, I guess the public at large maybe considered it cut and dry. I guess for people who don't know, the police say that, you know, Steve McNair, you know, on the afternoon of July 4th, 2009, Steve McNair was found murdered in his condo in downtown Nashville. And this is a condo that he was renting away from his family. And he had been shot four times, twice in the head and twice in the chest. And his mistress, a 20-year-old waitress at Dave & Buster's named Jenny Kazemi, was found dead at his feet with one gunshot wound to her head. And after 4 days of investigating, the Nashville police ruled that it was a murder-suicide, that his mistress had killed him and had killed herself. But after looking into it and talking to some people, we realized that there, you know, among Steve's family and friends and Jenny's family and friends, there was a lot of unanswered questions about what really happened.
And a Nashville cop by the name of Vincent Hill started investigating this case on his own.
Yes. So Vincent Hill was one of the first people I kind of tracked down. He was a former Nashville cop, and he had left the force. And then when Steve McNair turned up dead and the police closed the case so quickly, he started, you know, looking into it, and he started interviewing Steve and Jenny's friends and family, and basically investigating the case on his own. And he doesn't believe that Jenny Kazemi killed Steve McNair, and, you know, he's written multiple books about it, and we kind of follow his, you know, his path through the podcast of, you know, talking to people that he's talked to, in addition to some reporting that, you know, obviously more reporting that we did on our own. But he's kind of one of the central characters of the podcast.
And there are conflicting reports on how his body was actually found and what was actually detached from his body and where it was. Go ahead. This is live radio, but we need to hear exactly what one report indicated.
Yeah. So Vincent Hill has spoken to people, sources who he trusts. And again, these aren't people that I've spoken to, and, you know, this is a rumor that's been circulating around Nashville. And after the podcast came out, you know, it's a rumor that we've heard, you know, since then from people. But one of the rumors is that, you know, when Steve McNair was found dead, he had been castrated. And maybe I'll just leave it at that. But, you know, the details of the castration, at least the rumor of this castration, you know, are a little more graphic than that. But, you know, if that's not already graphic enough. So that's one of the rumors that, you know, Vincent Hill claims to have heard from, you know, multiple sources, just working his investigation. And the interesting thing, you know, going off that is, you know, this is something I interviewed the, you know, you'll hear later on, I interviewed the forensic pathologist who performed the autopsy on the body. And we'll kind of, you know, we get to the bottom of, you know, we talked to a medical professional who examined the body. But this rumor, you know, for now, you know, it's just a rumor. One of Steve McNair's, you know, close friends, Dr. Alvin Simpson, who's a professor of his at Alcorn State University, you know, heard this rumor and thought, you know, so much of it that he took this, the rumor, and he went to Steve's mother, Lucille, and he suggested that maybe they exhume Steve McNair's body to see if, in fact, he had been castrated. So, you know, there's just this circle, you know, kind of cloud of, you know, rumor, suspicion, speculation that still kind of hangs over Steve McNair's death to the point where, you know, his friends, you know, think that, you know, maybe they should exhume his body just to make sure that, you know, this rumor, what, you know, see if whether or not it's true.
We're talking with Tim Rohan. The name of the podcast is Fall of a Titan, the Steve McNair story. And as you detail, Jenny Kazemi didn't have anything in her previous life and didn't have, like, characteristics that would make you believe that she could commit such a hideous act. I mean, we're talking about four gunshots, correct?
Yeah, yeah. It was four shots, one to each temple and twice to the chest. And you know, it's interesting, you know, because, you know, later on in the podcast, as you'll hear, Frank, so, you know, there's some twists and turns. You know, early on, her friends and family, a lot of them, as you mentioned, you know, in episode three, you know, we talked to a lot of her friends and family who talk about she never shot a gun before in her life. And, you know, she was, you know, this, you know, maybe sexist thought, but, you know, she was this small petite girl. How could she have shot him, you know, four times? And I think, you know, later on in the podcast, you know, that in, you know, everything that they say there is, you know, that's something they believe these are her friends and family. Later on in the podcast, we get more into her background. And this, she had this troubled childhood that the police kind of referred to. And so, you know, it's, you know, I think for anyone who's listening to the podcast, it's very nuanced. You know, I think what I said toward the end was there was times when I thought, oh, wow, she didn't do it. And, there were times when, you know, talking to people, I thought, oh, well, maybe she did. And that's kind of the uncertainty that, you know, Steve McNair's friends and family are still dealing with, and Jenny Kazemi's friends and family are still dealing with it. They don't feel like they have any closure here. I think a lot of them don't believe Jenny actually did it.
And the really strange thing is the night that the murder and suicide happened, Steve was actually a second option for what she was originally going to do, because you do a great job of talking to her friends, and she was going to have a friend come up from Memphis to Nashville, and they were going to hang out. She canceled, so then Jenny calls up Steve. So you would think that you've got a murder-suicide, this thing's planned out, and you got it in your mind for a couple of days. The only reason it happened was the friend canceled from Memphis.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, you know, and her friend Lucretia Play, exactly, you know, is adamant, like, hey, you know, she's supposed to hang out with me that night. Now, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, obviously things can be spontaneous, and, you know, it doesn't completely rule out, you know, the possibility of, you know, Jenny killing Steve McNair, but it is something that makes you pause and scratch your head, like, okay, you know, her friends were talking to her that night, you know, a few hours before she turned up dead, and they said, you know, nothing seems wrong with her, and, you know, and again, you know, as you get further in the podcast, the next episode four, we talk about, you know, the police say that Jenny purchased the murder weapon, a gun, in the parking lot of a Dave & Buster's, the Dave & Buster's where she worked as a waitress, and she purchased it from an ex-con, Adrian Gilliam, and that's really where, you know, we get further into kind of the police narrative of what happened and how Vincent Hale has kind of poked holes in that narrative a little bit, and how there really isn't a whole lot of evidence that this gun sale took place between this ex-con and Jenny Kazemi. So there's a lot there, you know, there's a lot there, which is why, you know, a lot of people think these questions are, you know, valid, that, you know, that they don't think Jenny did it.
This podcast is so detailed that you actually have her audio talking with the police the night she got the DUI. I don't want to judge because we all have sin in our life. But boy, you know, my perception going into this was, hey, when I think of Steve McNair, I think of the former NFL MVP, the guy who almost beat the Rams in Super Bowl 34, a great leader, respected by all. And then you listen to this podcast and you realize, well, this is a guy that had two kids with two different women before he got married. He gets married and he gets an apartment on the side so he can bring women. And then she is upset, his mistress, Jenny Kazami, because McNair is cheating on her. I mean, this is a guy that really had some issues.
Well, you know, I think you're right in that, you know, I mean, you know, it's tough because, you know, Steve's not around to explain himself or, you know, I wasn't trying to, you know, say anything about him. His character, you know, is just kind of a matter of fact. You know, I think that's just like everything you laid out is what was happening, you know. And that was backed up by statements people gave to the police and, you know, friends who, you know, described his lifestyle. You know, and I think that what I'll say to that is, you know, I think, you know, as sports fans or journalists or whatever, we don't always know what's going on in people's lives, right? Whether it's an athlete who you admire or whether it's, you know, your next door neighbor. You know, I guess, you know, I mean, he had a whole life outside the football field. And I think a lot of people who are Titans fans and people who are Steve McNair fans, you know, were a little, you know, hesitant to listen to the podcast because, like you said, they viewed Steve as this hero, as this, you know, leader of men on the football field. And they didn't want to think of him, you know, in this kind of, different light off the field where he was living a different life and he had multiple mistresses and he had this condo and, you know, and then it all came out in the public, you know, so quickly in such a, you know, big way when he was murdered. So, you know, it was, you know, definitely an unseemly incident. But yeah, I guess that's what I would say about that.
Tim, did you attempt to speak to Mrs. McNair? And have you heard anything, if not, on a response from her family on this?
Yeah, so by Ms. McNair, well, I try to speak to both Ms. McNairs, both Steve's mother and his widow, Michelle. Dr. Alvin Simpson, the family friend who I mentioned, took me to Lucille McNair's house. I guess in the fall of 2017, and we had a meal and we chatted for a little bit, but she ultimately, declined to participate in the podcast. And Michelle McNair, through her lawyer, also declined. You know, and I think, you know, same thing we were talking about with the fans and, you know, people largely want to think of Steve in a certain way. You know, this isn't the easiest thing to talk about. You know, obviously the way in which he died and the way he was living in the last, you know, few years of his life. And so I completely understand, you know, why they wouldn't want to participate. But, you know, we were able to talk to people who knew, you know, Lucille and were able to, you know, give us, you know, maybe how she thought, you know, over the years. At one point, Lucille hired Vincent Hill, this ex-cop turned private investigator, to investigate the case on her behalf. So there were, you know, Lucille, Steve's mother, has been, you know, she's featured prominently in episode 6. And she has been, you know, there has been periods of time throughout, you know, the last 9+ years that she's been, you know, fighting for answers, trying to figure out what happened to her son.
Final thought, if you had to lay a milkshake bet down right now, do you think that Jenny acted alone?
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know if I could. Yeah, I think there's enough of a question. You know, I don't know if I could put a bet down, but you know, I think there's a question about there's a real question about whether or not she did it. I think, you know, once you listen through the rest of the podcast and hear, you know, just the nuance of the case, there's questions about two of Steve's friends who found the bodies and why they waited to call the police. There's questions about, you know, this gun sale that the police say happened in which Jenny purchased a gun from a ex-con. You know, there's questions about whether or not Steve had a will. And, you know, it's just very, there's a lot of characters. There's a lot of, you know, various factors and things going on. And like I said, you know, I don't know if I came out of the podcast thinking, Jenny did it, or, you know, someone in particular did it, or, you know, whatever. It's just, it seemed like there was obviously a lot more there than we previously thought.
Tim, great reporting. We really appreciate it. I encourage everybody to go to their podcast, Fall of a Titan, the Steve McNair story. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. All right, that is Tim Rohan. Before we go to break, quick word about Maryville University. Each new student is assigned a life coach who is a knowledgeable resource for academic advising, mentoring, and campus networking, career guidance, and all things Maryville. We'll take a short time out. What's it like to see your flesh and blood play in the National Hockey League? Bob Frederick next.